I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 515. You had me at...
This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm awkward today.
Are you?
Yeah.
Are you awkward any day? Every day?
I'm all right. I am awkward every day. But I'm uncomfortably awkward today. Noticeably awkward, in fact. Might be more accurate.
Oh,
yes. When you see stuff and you don't know how to process stuff, like some people are like, okay, I understand that's weird, and they can go about their business. Me, I obsess over it because I want to understand why I'm uncomfortable and or feel awkward or anxious about X. And then the rabbit hole gets presented. Oh, that just sounds gross.
Yeah, that sounds really, really not where you wanted to go with that, actually.
And then you decide how far down the rabbit hole you're going.
No. Again, continue.
With your fist. Your
fist of
truth.
No.
Into the rabbit hole.
No.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Long story short.
don't go down the rabbit hole.
I got exposed to something that I've heard about before, but I didn't really think anything of it until I saw it in action.
Hold on. Before you go there, I'm just going to say right now, if you have young children listening to this podcast,
yeah, you could
this
not
is not the one for them.
Yet.
Go ahead, turn this one right off. Just go ahead.
Go put on some Arthur.
Yep.
Don't put on any Caillou, because Caillou sucks.
Caillou sucks. This is not, nope.
Go get some Peppa Pig up in your kid's life.
Yo.
Peppa Pig is the shit.
Maybe even do like a couple of the remixes of Peppa Pig, because those make me laugh.
Go find some Lazy Town.
Lazy Town.
Oh my God. Like, I am obsessed with all the YouTube things that people have done to Lazy Town episodes.
Well, you know the guy that played the baddie got cancer, right?
No.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
No. I was just singing the Bake a Pretty Cake song with a little chocolate mix in it.
Yeah. But anyway, before she goes into where she's going, I just thought I'd throw that out there because,
yeah,
you know, we got some friends and fam that got little ones. This is not the one for them.
Awkward at the thought of most things.
Just don't let your kids listen to this one. This is not for them.
Don't let your sensitive friends, children, or pets.
Just skip right over this part.
Especially if you have wiener dogs, keep them out of the room. Just do it. Trust me, you'll thank me later.
Yeah, you will.
We are an explicit podcast, and it's about to get explicit in this bitch.
It's always explicit in this bitch. So, just...
No, it's why they don't label neighborhoods. Like, this is an explicit neighborhood, so people understand what they're walking into. I think that'd be great.
I mean, I just need signs on my house or, like, a sign that protrudes me. Like, maybe if I could make, like, instead of the heads-up game, I could just make, like, a flash warning so that when I flash my phone up, you just see, like, warning.
Like, explicit inappropriate content. Dialogue this way.
About to happen. It just needs to...
Hide your kids and your wife, because it's about to get pretty gross.
And then it, like, scrolls through, like, hide your kids, hide your wife. No, seriously, shit's about to go down.
If you don't want to make bad choices, do not come in this house.
Yo, you've been warned. It just cycles through.
Anyway.
Okay, so that warning's done. You may proceed now.
Okay, great. So, party games. Couch coop games with your friends.
Love them.
We love them.
Good times.
I enjoyed the Mario Party. All about that.
Mario Party until they fucked Mario Party and made it impossible to win.
Yes. But party games, games with your friends, I'm all about them.
Yep.
And
Rock Band before it was turned into ass.
And the last few years, we've seen some games that
don't bring the party to the party game genre.
They bring it brings something.
Yeah,
to the part. Yeah.
That's about it.
So let me talk a little bit about my experience leading up to this particular game.
All right.
So I've had some very awesome people, friends, as I call them, because they were fans and now they're friends.
But not Franz Ferdinand.
I've had them give me things on Steam, because I do enjoy playing some Steam games.
Yo, Duck Game.
My first one was
My
Hot of a Boyfriend. So clearly my friends know the type of stuff I like. I also got sent Shower with Your Dad Simulator.
Yep.
I don't know if you're seeing the trend here. Weird in our game choices. Mm-hmm. Games that I've obviously looked at, and I'm like, I don't know. I could see where the fun
Have
might
you played
be,
any
but
duck
I'm not
game?
Sure if I would. Huh?
Have you played any duck game?
No.
Why not?
I have not played that. No.
See, feel better about party games if you've played duck
maybe.
Game.
All right, then. Maybe I have to cleanse out what has now happened.
It would be, yep.
But yeah, Hot of a Boyfriend, dating sim with birds, got a little weird about birds for a bit, then showering with your dads, right? And, you know, don't want to date every birdie, because, you know, you have to be very specific about the birds that you copulate with. But anyway, Shower with Your Dad Simulator, I thought was a really funny twist, because, you know, when you're a little kid, there's a good chance that you've possibly showered with a mom or dad, depending on, you know, your life story or whatever. And I know I did, and that brought some very interesting memories back playing that game. I won't go into those here.
If Shower with Your Dad makes you have the feels, you really should get into therapy.
Not feels necessarily, but I just remember one being very, I'm going to say, I was a very precocious kid.
No.
And very curious about things.
No.
And instead of just saying, hey, what is this thing? I would, like, hide and, like, spy on the thing. Mm-hmm. And then be like, I saw that thing. I don't know what it is, but I don't have one. If you kind of get where I'm going with that. But it brought back all the whimsicalness of being a kid who didn't understand how things worked and why. Then after that, a certain friend of mine bought me Mount Your Friends, which I knew just by the verbiage that we were possibly getting into some dicey territory. And I had heard stuff about it, and then I downloaded it and played it. And I remember, because it's one of the last games that Esh Mom got to see me play, and she just didn't know what to think about it.
Most people, that is their reaction. Yep.
Right. You're just kind of like, so there's a goat, and you climb on the goat, and then your friends climb you, and you have to get high. And while that seems very tame, you have a dongle that is just whapping away.
So
constantly.
Mount Your Friends is a physics-based game. You probably should have started there.
Yeah. Okay.
And like Plop, you are operating individual limbs
with different buttons. Friend.
So you have to kind of get into a rhythm and figure out how you need to move your limbs in order to move your player once they're dropped onto the screen to then be able to latch on
mount your friend's
character in the last position they were. And there's a timer that's running, and so you're basically building this statue out of your figures that you're moving. And that by itself being physics-based and independent appendage moving would be one thing. But then, in addition, all of the characters are kind of sort of dressed like high school wrestlers in leotards for wrestling.
Yes.
With massive dongs.
Dongs. They just move wherever the
fuck
they want.
Just massive helicopter dick for no reason.
And it's just so jarring because you can't, they want you to look at it, and there's nothing you can do about it because that's exactly what you're going to do. And I played a good amount of that because once you could get past that a little bit, you're like, okay, I'm just not going to look at this thing that's swirling around like happy, shiny keys.
Right. Then just focused on, can I actually beat the timer and be the king of the mountain,
basically. But that initial shock, though, like, kept me there for a while. And after that, I was like, you know, my friends like to expose me to stuff, but I think I'm just going to take a break.
But mount your friends is cute, right? Because, like you said, after you get over the initial shock, then you're really just into, okay, what ways can I, like, move this pile and make it difficult for my opponent to get on top of me time-wise so that I can win? And it becomes about winning and being king of the hill. And then it's fun, right? And then on the off chance when you're looking at, you know, who won, then you're looking at all the weird forms that you guys made, and, you know, you may still have one or two characters who have, you know, floppy dongs moving around, and then you have the laugh, and then, like, you reset and you go about your game. Right. The game that you're about to talk about is different.
I'm kind of glad that you brought all that up, because a lot of the things that I really liked about Mount Your Friends are present in the game I'm going to talk about, but they're dialed up to, like, 111?
It's just wrong. They're dialed up to wrong.
Like, they're dialed up to the raunchy. Yes. And don't get me wrong, I enjoy me some good raunch every once in a while. But
there's nothing wrong with raunch.
Like, I like my raunch on my fries. Like, that, like,
I like it's pretty extra side of raunch.
But, like this kind of sits in that place where I'm like, even I'm like, damn, you need to, like, you have, like, no chill game. No chill. So the game I'm going to briefly talk about, or rather, my experience at being exposed to it, is called Genital Jousting, which makes you think of swords, which I guess you could kind of, if you've ever played swords, which obviously I'm sure some of you guys have, and you guys don't have to tell me, because that's not my business. I'm just going to sip my tea and go about my day. Okay? That's your life story, not mine.
She's not judging.
I didn't play it because I didn't have the fundamental accessories for that, but that's fine. It's fine.
I played Nerf swords when I was a kid, because I had a Nerf sword.
Genital Jousting can be found on Steam for $5, and it is an online local multiplayer game. It's about flaccid penises and wiggly anus holes, and 8 of your friends can play with you. And it's got very positive reviews on Steam, which makes me think, what is wrong with you? What's wrong with you people? But anyway, like I said, it's a party game. It's a sausage party, and you get to choose your penis, and you get to change its color, and you can put little outfits on your penis, and they're very wiggly, and they leave, like, penis snail trails on the map, which is kind of gross.
It's so gross.
It's very gross. And then betwixt the balls is a little, like, starfish for the butthole. And most of your games pretty much require you to put your penis head into the butthole.
The goal of the game is to fuck your friends.
You're literally fucking the butts of your friends' penises.
You can bring your octave down. You can bring your octave down.
I can't. It's so I feel so awkward talking about it. Anyway, and sometimes your penis is dressed like a cop. And sometimes it's wearing a muscle t-shirt, which I find highly ironic. some of the games that are included are like sports balls. Where you are, like, on a soccer team.
Well, that's when you get to party mode. You got to unlock party mode first.
But you got to play the games first, which can be really awkward. But you can play things like soccer balls, or you can play games like Bukkake. Because, you know, that sounds like you. Here's the thing about, and this is the game that really kind of, like, I was like, ew. Now, mind you, like,
that's the one.
This is Pendalicious here.
That's the one that did it.
This is the girl who likes to make jokes about that, and even had a song about it that she sang. It's just like Bukkake.
Stop it.
I can make the joke because I can pull myself out of it, because it's never something I would experience. Like, it made me so awkward. My stomach is just like, stop talking about this game. It's making you sick. But in the party game of Bukkake, you and your penis is, you're in a, like, a field with some other penises, and you have to fuck your friends to then be able to shoot out colored jizz.
Yes.
and thus you just want to splatter, kind of like Splatoon. Definitely. You want to cover the ground in your bukkake.
It is, in fact, just penis Splatoon. That's what it is. But
that particular
the thing
game
to talk about here is, so there's two pieces. First, party mode in General Dedelsing is not unlocked at the beginning. You basically have to play a bunch of games where you are, in fact, just trying to get your penis head into the ball anuses of your friends that are on the screen. So it gets very hectic when you have, you know, three other players or more, because everybody's just trying to get
every head is
butt.
Looking for a butt.
Okay? Once you're down to the last head and butt open, a 3-second countdown starts. And that's basically the last rush that that last penis, that last player has to attempt to get into another butt. You get a point for getting into another character, and you get a point for getting in. So someone getting into you. So theoretically, you have the chance to make 2 points with the exception of the last man out. As those rounds end, okay, points are tallied on a tally screen, and the more points that someone has, the longer their member becomes. And you get to see it grow towards the finish line. And so whichever penis grows past the finish line first is the winner.
Is the wiener.
Okay. And so after a few rounds of that, you get a tally screen. No, if you're going in, you got to go all the way in, Panda. You get a tally screen that has lines of delineation that you fill up with jizz.
Yeah,
all the players,
and that's what unlocks your part, the party versions of the game,
and other alternate costumes.
So yeah,
for your dick.
So, you know, yeah,
costumes for your dick.
So here's the positives that I'm gonna take away from this experience. Very inventive games, for one. The mechanics of your wiggliness is definitely impressive. I would have loved to have not seen it attributed to floppy wieners per se, but it's the ugliest cute thing I think I've seen in a long time. Like, it is like the PT Cruiser of games for me, because like, it's all bright colors, everything's very happy, like nothing looks menacing. These are flaccid penises. These are not like rock hard, I'm gonna punch you in the face penises. So that's also nice. Like, I'm not threatened by them. I'm just disturbed by their presence and how they move. It's kind of like, it's like a centipede. I don't like the way centipedes move. Like, it creeps me out. Uh-huh. And these penises kind of move like centipedes do. So you're kind of like, But I mean, obviously, victory in most games, like, anytime you win, you're like, hell yeah, I did that. And eventually you start hearing the conversation of people. Because then I went and looked at, like, some people actually playing it, like Couch Coop. And all of a sudden, the direction of dialogue becomes very sexually suggestive. And everyone just gets all about it, like in a very orgy mentality. And yeah, it's an experience.
Uh-huh.
I will say that. I would watch other people play this game. Like, if they're all on a couch, I would get like a chair behind the couch and I would just watch the screen. But I would not partake in playing this game because one or two things could happen. Because, I mean, I'm that weird person that when I decide I'm going to be competitive, I get really competitive.
Uh-huh.
Like, it is not a, it's not a great trait in me. Like, I get ugly competitive. Like, I start saying mean things. I start saying inappropriate things. Like, I get very testosterone filled. And then I kind of become a dick. Like, literally like a dick.
I mean, sometimes you're a dick.
But when I'm a winning dick, like, that's like fuckboy status in my mind. I become a fuckboy.
You do. There are times where you do.
I just need a scumbag Steve hat because I hit a certain level.
You take
and
my
when
hat.
I come out, I have photos of you doing it. A werewolf. It's like the full moon of dickery is out, and I become like a dick wolf, like a douchebag dick wolf, for as long as I'm winning. And then the minute I don't win...
But not a Law and Order dick wolf.
No, not that. Not that one. A bad one. A douchebag dick wolf.
Right.
And it's just really... And I hate it about myself because once that moon, like, you know, goes away and the sun comes out and then I wake up naked in a field somewhere, I realize all the horrible things I have done because obviously I don't lose my memory here. This is, you know, symbolism at its best. And I get really angry because then I'm losing and then I'm just an asshole.
Right.
So, I mean, I guess this game would be perfect for me because I'm a dick and an asshole. Right. And I should like this.
And but I just had that epiphany.
Yeah.
Just now.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. That just happened. That just happened. Thank you, Genital Jousting. I've become a better person.
Thanks, $5 game.
I mean, most people have $5. So, I mean, if you have $5 and you want to have an experience with your friends that might be soul searching and soul opening like mine, or if you just want to shove fake dicks into other buttholes,
see some really shocked faces,
then get Genital Jousting on Steam. Obviously, invite your friends over. Don't even tell them what you're playing. PC? It's currently just on Steam. I imagine that I don't know how they would swing this for consoles with kids.
My question. I know it's on Steam. My question is PC or Mac and PC?
Just PC.
Thank you.
As of right now.
Yeah.
I believe.
And here's the thing. You could absolutely play it on console. I don't think that you would.
No.
You could do four player on console.
I will say this. Of all the mini games that I got subjected to, the one I was least repulsed by was the one with the wiener dogs, which at first you're kind of hurting.
Because you just have to herd them to your side.
Yes, you don't have to. At first I was worried we're going to have some bestiality and you were going to like fuck the butts of the dogs. But you don't.
I think that's what they wanted to scare everybody into. You just
have to scare the wiener dogs with your penis into a fence and get them safe from all of the sodomy that is happening in the field. But the doggies are very cute. Like, the animations are very cute. And they're very imaginative on how you're using the penis, which is also, you know, higher thinking. It's just, but the penises in the butts, and you just put the penises in the butts, and then you've just got this weird connect, and then you get this weird feeling in your gut, and then you're kind of like, I should not watch this anymore, but then you continue to watch very much like a really bad car accident, and you can't walk away from it because you realize that it's telling you something about yourself, maybe, or at least in my case, that's what happened. On Steam, check it out. And the big thing about the Steam site when you go to it, it says don't blink to consent. So make sure you don't blink so that you're consenting to what you are going to look at. So, I mean, consent is a really big thing in this game. They want you to consent to everything because they realize that this is going to be uncomfortable and possibly trigger some people. So, yeah, that's what I got exposed to and wanted to share that. Do not gift it to me, anyone. I don't want it. I don't want it. Because I know somebody was like, it's like, no.
Stocking stuffer?
Ew. So, see, in my mind, just went to the worst horrible place ever. Not that I've ever, obviously, clearly, could not use a sock in that fashion, but damn. Ew. And I'm not grossed out by a lot of things, but this really kind of irked. Like, it was not a funny...
Well, I think it's because of the style. You know, the design style of the game is somewhat cartoonish. It almost feels like...
They're clearly making a joke about it, but they're also... They're not being shy about exactly what they...
It's just a giant dick joke. Okay? It's a giant dick joke.
It's eight dick jokes if you have seven friends.
It's eight dick jokes at a time. And it is. It's designed to kind of catch your friends off guard and be that party game. Okay.
Like, hey, you know, let's play ships and like spaceships, and your dick is a spaceship, and you're propelling through space.
No,
and
it's just
the jetpack is your butthole. You're farting yourself to space, and you have to avoid.
You're thinking of it the wrong way. Okay,
it's just
Genital Jousting is the perfect digital party game for people who like games like Cards Against Humanity and
Dick Figures.
I think that's what it is. So
I like I like Dick Figures. That's funny.
Anyway, that's what this game is designed to be. It's just, you know, just the most absurd party game. Because we haven't had an absurd game, just straight up absurd, in a while. You know, with more and more of the light novel games and...
I mean, we've seen some bizarre things come out of the dating sim world, like that horse prince game with that horse that has a human head on it.
Exactly. But as far as, like...
And then the skeleton simming game where you're dating skeletons, like straight-up skeletons.
Right, but those are, in all honesty, normal for Eastern games.
Yes, touche.
Okay, I'm talking about on the Western side of the world. We haven't had a Western, just absurd game in a while. Like, the last one that I can think of is maybe Devil's Third?
I didn't play that.
Yeah, it's on the Wii. It's just absurd because you're a assassin and you're kind of Russian, but you work for the Americans named Ivan, but you're all about the Eastern world, so your body is covered in tattoos. You constantly walk around in a situation. He's basically like Duke Nukem's second cousin on his mother's side that wanted to be him.
One really talks to unless they absolutely have
like
to.
In a mission, he constantly always doesn't have a shirt on. He's using like ridiculous weapons, and it's not a good game. So, but absurd wise, like that's as absurd as a Western game has come over here.
I mean, here you go, guys. You want in your face. Awkwardness, here it is, in all of its wiggly glory.
Don't play it around your children's.
No, because then your children, very much like me, will be precocious and will have questions for you. And will then eventually think that their dicks are rocket ships and that they will blast off to the moon one day.
You may already believe that. We don't know. We don't know. Right. We don't judge. All we're saying is, don't play this around your kids. Be a good parent.
Be a good adult. Do it under the shadow of night with seven of your closest friends. And you have to blood pact it. Like, no one can know.
Everybody what's about wears to headphones. Down. Everybody that's right. wears headphones.
That's and that's that. And that is that.
But and that's, you have that's one my person experience. Dedicated to switching the input just in case one of your kids walks in because they want juice or something.
Hey, mommy, I need a. Yes.
You got
that's
one
all,
person
that's
dedicated to input switch.
Like, oh, look, we're watching Chronicle. I love the Chronicle marathon. I feel so adult. Cultish right now. Mm-hmm. Syria. It's a place.
Oh my god. I can't believe
it. But anyway.
There, of all places.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh god.
Yeah. Galaxy. But anyway, that was my experience with genital jousting. If I ever actually play it, which like I said, I'm going to strongly not, it may happen. And if I do, happen. I will.
You've already said you don't want it, so I know your fiancé.
I don't want it. He saw that I was watching the video and he was like, I'm like, no, I am not thinking about it. I am not. That is not what I am doing.
Don't be surprised if it's not already purchased.
I feel so skeeved out just thinking about it. But that's what happened at me. What happened at you?
Okay, well.
Now that I'm done.
Yeah, yeah. So the rest of this podcast is definitely kid safe.
So kids can come back now.
With the exception of like the language.
Kids.
So
get in the
come
van,
on back,
kids.
Childrens. Auntie Ninja has some things that she wants to tell you about.
Auntie Banda is just very gross and don't get cookies from her.
don't eat her cookies.
Don't eat my cookies.
Don't
do it.
Hey kids. No, I'm just kidding, not kids. So, I've been doing a couple of things this week. One, well, really, kind of a few little things I want to cover before I get into my big thing. This week, Nintendo was actually on the Jimmy Fallon show. Did you hear about this, Panda?
No.
Yeah, so Nintendo was on Jimmy Fallon this week. Miyamoto was there, Reggie Fils-Aimé, Fils-Aimé was there, and they were debuting Super Mario Run. And also showing some live gameplay from the Nintendo Switch. Because, you know, Jimmy's a big gamer himself. He's a huge Nintendo fan. It was really cool because Miyamoto actually sat in with the Roots and played the Mario theme song. He played an acoustic guitar. So if you haven't had a chance to seek that out on the internet, definitely do.
Now I'm going to do that. That will be my life's mission after the show.
The nostalgia feels, which is cool. And so the live gameplay stuff that they showed off on the NX, again, looks great. Demos that are practice and staged for TV are not the same as actual gameplay. So I'm reserving judgment on the NX until Nintendo makes all of their detail announcements in January. I think they said during their next Treehouse in January they were going to do that. So we'll see what that has to hold for us. But it was very interesting to watch Jimmy play the Super Mario Run game live, and also find out that on all of the iOS devices that are currently at Apple stores up until the game comes out next week, you can actually go in and play a demo of the game. So you can actually try the game, at least like one level of it, right now locally in the Apple store, which I thought was really cool and an interesting tie. And obviously just a signal that Apple's relationship with Nintendo is at a good place right now. So we'll probably see beyond Super Mario Run more games like it that show up on iOS devices. So I will more than likely be playing Super Mario Run. I mean, come on, guys. I'm a gamer. I cut my teeth really on it.
You cut your teeth on Mario. Mario has influenced you greatly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I love Donkey
Kong. So that just makes goddamn sense.
Yeah. So that's a given. I'd love to hear your thoughts about it. And if you're playing, share your screenshots with us on Instagram and at ESH News. And we'll like them and all that kind of stuff. But I will definitely be playing that. And again, still holding judgment on the NX. You know, everything I see looks good, but seeing is not necessarily believing, as we all know.
I mean, I look at Monets all the time, and from far away, they look great. But up close, I'm like, I can do that. I can just make lines and squigglies and like dots.
That's how I feel about Pollock paintings. I'm like, I could throw paint at a canvas.
Just make me mad and then leave me in a room with a canvas and like brushes and I will make a fucking masterpiece.
Like, just piss me off and leave me in a barn with paint and a canvas and I could throw paint at a canvas, but like then I like look at the painting and I'm like, I can't do it with that kind of balance and forethought. I'm just shit on a canvas. So anyway, moving on.
I would talk about art. Put paint on my hands and just howler monkey at the canvas. Or my idea of a big art installation is just to do AHT at, and it'd be revolutionary. Because I'm.
When you have to call your own shit revolutionary, it's not revolutionary. Moving on. So
yes, it is.
It's actually not. So there's that, and it's not. And then moving on from that, one thing that I did was I was looking at some of, you know, the things that we talked about after watching the Video Game Award show, which was...
Man, that was fun. I enjoyed it, but damn, it was too damn long.
It was just so long. But what was really cool is that, like... I got some of the stats, and, like, viewership of the award show was up, like, 65% over the previous year. So, like, the show got enough good buzz last year that, like, it almost doubled its viewership, which was cool.
Oh, that is cool.
So, you know, they'll definitely be back next year, which will be awesome. But I was just looking at, like, some of the games that won and some of the games that I wanted to win that didn't and some of the games that I hadn't heard of. And, you know, we had joked about... you know, Last Guardian not being the most anticipated game or in the category again because it was finally Gold Master and was out. And I was like, yeah, it is Golden Master and it's out. So I took a break from Dishonored 2, which I'm still committed to finishing, by the way. But Rune Hunting is a son of a bitch. Anyway, I took a break from Dishonored 2 and I started playing Last Guardian. And before I go into this, one thing I do want to share is it came across my feed and it both upset me personally, but then it also made me think about just the community in general. There was a well-known YouTuber, vid player, who I had seen this photo and at first I thought that it was just the box art for the game for Last Guardian, But then I came to realize after reading some of what people were posting about this photo, it was actually the game disc that had been destroyed. And this particular vlogger, out of rage, which some people believe to just be simulated for the extended views.
That's a damn shame. You should never be destroying games for views. I'm sorry.
Destroyed the game and other people who didn't. And again, it made me think two different ways, right? So me personally as a gamer, I'm like, there's no game that has frustrated me so much that I've ever destroyed the disc. There are games that I've been frustrated with that I didn't enjoy the gameplay, or I thought that, you know, the game that was delivered was different than what it was hyped to be. And when I was buying discs, I absolutely returned those discs. Most of the time getting, you know, half credit at the store or whatever, so that somebody else that maybe wouldn't have the same hang-ups as me would be able to get the game at a reduced price and, you know, enjoy the game.
Maybe find something that they enjoyed that you could not find. Right,
exactly. You know, because everybody is different. I struggle because I don't want to say, like, you should never destroy a game because, hey, like, how you express your anger is how you express your anger. But I do feel like there are quite a few vloggers out there today that are personality more than they are gamer.
Substance.
Or fan of said thing that they claim to be reviewing and being a fan of. And that really bothers me, you know, because, like, we're just our authentic selves on this podcast. I enjoy talking video games and nerdy shit with you, and you pretty much enjoy talking nerdy shit with me, as long as I don't correct you too much.
I do it. It's a thing I do, and I like it. So if I didn't like it, I wouldn't do it.
But we're just having a legit, honest conversation with each other, and you guys who are listening at home or on the road, you rather enjoy the weird, wacky conversations that we have about this shit. And that's awesome. Okay, and we...
And this is stuff that we do even off air. Like, this is just how we are in life.
We are. We just happen to record this and put it out for people. And those of you who like it, awesome. And for those who don't, who want something with more detail or more interview-based, like, that's cool. Do you, boo-boo? That's fine.
There's, like, 18 billion shows who are doing exactly that, but that's not what we're doing here.
And like I said, everybody has their own thing. And I do think that there's value in having a group of people producing content that is about the reaction to things. I think that that's all valid. I really do. But what I struggle with is the authenticity. Like, that's where I have, like, my line of, like, if that's really how you feel and that's really what you're about, then cool. But more times than not, like, I'm seeing more and more people popping up and gaining popularity. And it's obvious that they are just playing a persona that they've created. And it's not necessarily for entertainment. It's a persona they created because they knew that it would create chatter and positive and negative publicity. And they didn't care. As long as it creates that, they'll continue to do it. And to me, that's inauthentic. Like, if you create a persona to entertain people, cool. If you create a persona to basically troll everybody, fuck you and the horse you rode in on. That's just my personal opinion, and I'm expressing it while it's still legal. And so it really bothered me that, you know, this is a person that basically has created a career out of having negative reactions to things and destroying them, and or getting very angry about them. And that really rubbed me the wrong way. So I was like, after I saw that, I was like, no, I am absolutely playing this game. And I'm going to find out, like, really and truly, is it that frustrating? So a couple of things I want to put on the table first about Last Guardian. Last Guardian is made by Fumito Ueda. And Fumito was behind Ico and Shadow of the Colossus. If you are a PlayStation 2 or 3 owner in the late 90s and the early 2000s, you know about Ico and Shadow of the Colossus. They are games that stand out really across any platform for what they bring to the table. They are phenomenal games. They are very artistic. They are games that I would say Ico laid the foundation for games like Journey and Flower. in that...
Oh, flower!
In the games, no language that is really completely understandable is spoken between the main player and their companion. And the games are not straightforward platformers like many players are used to, especially today. You know, many games are straightforward, like, here's your sandbox, go play in it, or here's your room order, go play through them, meet the last boss, kill the last boss, you have win, yay, go you.
Yay, you did the thing!
Aiko was not like that. You had the Princess Yorda, who you didn't speak her language, and she didn't speak your language, and it was basically a gigantic escort mission. And for the longest time, the only weapon you had was a stick.
See, that just speaks volumes.
Yeah. Like,
because
yeah.
help is universal.
Okay.
Caring is a universal thing.
And
you don't need to be able to communicate to do those things.
And that's the thing. Ueda's games are much deeper than just solve the puzzle.
Let me hit this with a stick and move.
Right. And so if you didn't play Aiko or Shadow of the Colossus, you had no idea what The Last Guardian was going to be or be about, or in all honesty, how difficult it was going to be. So double dumbass on you for not doing research and just living on the hype train and buying
choo-choo.
A game that you had no knowledge of. I don't feel bad for people who buy a game they have no knowledge of, and they're like, well, this thing sucks because I can't do this and I can't do that. I'm like,
now here's the thing. I did not play Aiko or Shadow of the Colossus.
I gave you Aiko to fucking play.
I know, and I never played it. It's still sitting at the Esch House upstairs in my old bedroom in the wall. It's sitting there all pretty, untouched, and I didn't play it. And
Double dumbass on you.
Right, but here's the thing, though. Even though I didn't play it, because you know I'm big about narrative.
Yes.
And I love inventive ways of telling a story, unconventional methods of doing it. And I knew that these games presented those because of the way people talked about them. So, I mean, I was planning on getting Last Guardian, and I actually still want to, the fiancé wants me to at least play Shadow of Colossus before I go into The Last Guardian. So I can actually have hands-on.
I feel like,
could I jump into this one without it?
Yeah. So here's the deal. So let me break it down, and then you can make your decision, okay?
Okay.
So here's...
Because I am one of those dumb double fuck people who didn't play.
Right. But I'm going to break it down for you right now. And then what I'm going to tell you is your better bet is to play a little bit of Aiko. Because I think they did a remastered and re-released. I think.
Okay.
For current console. If they did, you'd be better off playing that and then going into Guardian. Because... Guardian is much more like Aiko than it is like Colossus.
Okay.
So, Last Guardian almost starts exactly like Aiko starts. Okay? And Ueda's games are very much deep and focused on relationship building, puzzle solving, and deep story. Okay, that is slowly revealed.
Well, isn't that what a relationship is? A giant puzzle?
You're gonna get that kind of deep. It's too early. I just had coffee.
I'm just saying, relationships are a big puzzle.
They are and very puzzling at times. All right, continuing on. So the way that the game starts is you are a young boy, something happens and you wake up in this pit. And your body is now covered in these symbols that you don't understand. And Turiko is there in the room with you. Now, I always say Turiko because that's how the character calls them. In the manuals, it's called Trico. And I think it's just because people thought it would be easier for Western audiences to say Trico instead of Turiko. But I don't understand why that's so hard. So anyway, Turiko is the big... catbird figure.
Okay.
The luck dragon.
The kitty bird dragon.
I call him Falcor in my head, the luck dragon. So anyway, Trico is hurt and also chained up. It has a couple spears in it. And when you try to near Turiko, Turco's eyes glow this kind of faint pink red to let you know that...
He's not happy?
It's angered, probably a little frightened, and it will attack. And so you basically have to run around, and there are these glowing barrels that you can find that glow blue, and they're food for Turco. And usually in any level that you play, there's either three or four of them hanging around. So you feed Turco. Turco comes to rely on you. You're able to build friendship. You're able to take the spears out. Now, one thing I learned later in the game as I was playing was whenever Turco takes spears, you'll actually see blood from that area stain its feathers. You can pet Turco, and if you soothe and pet Turco in the area where feathers are bloodstained, the blood goes away.
Oh. Okay.
And so I found it out by accident, and so now every time Turco is attacked, I immediately go and like, all right, where are all the blood spots? I have to take care of this. I have to soothe Turco. Like, I am that invested in the character. Because the game unwinds and has you basically solving puzzles with Turco's help. And there are many puzzles that you can't solve without Turco helping you. Initially, when you start off the game, Turco, much like a cat, does really what the fuck Turco wants. Like, you can't get Turco to go in the direction that you want. Sometimes it follows you, sometimes it doesn't follow you immediately. Yeah. Sometimes it just rolls over and lays down and scratches itself, and you're like, no, come on, I want to go over here, and all this kind of stuff. It's not until you get a little bit further in the game when the game tells you that you have actually built a bond with Turco that you can then direct Turco. So, the initial, like, 4 or 5 levels can be very frustrating because you're like, I want to jump up here and I need you to put me up here. And no matter what you do, you got to wait till Turco's good and goddamn ready and figures it out itself.
It's the purest of cat sims.
Yeah, it really is. Cat sims. Like, it really is. Like, no joke. And so, you go through and you start to learn how you can communicate with Turco, how Turco understands you, and basically you learn that you're in this area that is not your home. The character that you play, the boy that you play, is narrating this story. So in English subtitles that show up on the screen, but in a made-up language that, at least I believe it's made up, it sounds very Native American in its founding.
Okay.
Will explain to you the story and is narrating it. And so it sounds like it is a memory of this boy that he is telling when he is much older to someone about waking up in this area, realizing that it was the lair of these beasts, trying to get out with Turco. When you first get out of the cave, you look up and you can see that there are these massive spires. And Turco wants to get to the top of the spires. You don't know what's at the top of the spires, but there's something that is of deep, deep
value,
deep
value to
Turco up there. So that's what you start to progress to do, is to try and make it up to the top of the spires. And the things that get in your way are, there are these armored soldiers that if they capture you, they'll take you to the blue door if you can't get away from them. And this is really the only frustrating mechanic of the game that I've come across so far, because they will grab you, sling you over their shoulder, your markings will start to glow, and in order to get away from them, you have to wiggle. And in order to wiggle, you have to hit every button that is on your controller, or mash all of your face buttons. And there are these symbols that show up on the screen that as you are successfully mashing them hard enough, they will disappear and the screen will become clear again. At the moment that the screen becomes completely clear, you will jump away from the enemies and they'll be stunned for like half a second. But it takes you a full second to recover to get up to your feet. So unless you like are able to stop immediately mashing so that you can identify the jump button, which they put jump on triangle instead of on X, which we're all used to, and duck down is on X. So many times when I go to jump to try and get some space between me and them because those enemies move fast, I would end up ducking down and they grab me again. And so it takes a good like 4 or 5 seconds of fighting to get loose. It takes another half second to a second to actually get back up on your feet. So it becomes this really difficult thing of actually getting away from these characters because you have no weapon. You have no fight skill, so there's, like, no punch. You can either jump or you can duck down or you can call Trico. Typically, Trico will take these things out, but there are symbols that show up in the world that scare Trico enough away from things to keep Trico from coming into a room. So there are these centers that you walk into that when you look at it, you realize this was a cage that was used to, like, train Toriko's type of beast? To be fighters. There's a trigger that happens that puts them immediately into attack mode. They're not able to discern friend from foe. They just stay on attack. And the first time you encounter one, Toriko is, like, terrified and doesn't want to jump down into the area and is anxious about it, even though you walk off, because I think Toriko knows what's going to happen. But eventually, there are enemies coming that are going to take you out. So Toriko jumps down, gets triggered, takes out those enemies, but then swallows you.
Oh. Hmm. Okay.
And then you wake up. And you're like, what the fuck? You no longer have your mirror that allows you to direct Toriko to fire lightning from its tail. So you don't have that weapon anymore. That sucks. And you just start traversing the rest of the area. As you get outside of those, I call them training camps, another thing that slows down Toriko are what I call God's eyes. And there are these glass mirrors that the stained glass that is in them is arranged in a way so it looks like a big yellow eye. And Toriko won't walk anywhere near where these eyes are. So you either have to slide the glass off a wall or find something to break the glass and destroy the eye. And when they're on land, that's real simple, but you eventually get to a point where they're hanging up like wind chimes and you have to basically climb to the top of them. Drop them off their rail.
Oh, okay.
And the difficulty with that
is you can't get up because Toriko won't go near them.
And so you have to find your own way up. And if you have any problems with height at all in games.
Oh, God. And we know I do.
You will have difficulty because just like in the previous Ico and Shadow of the Colossus game, the camera is not your friend. There are many times where you will jump in the wrong direction because you have not lined up and held the camera, because it will sometimes, you know, just kind of meander on its own. Held the camera exactly in the position behind you to make the jump in the direction you think you want to go. So there have been many a times that I've missed grabbing onto Toriko's tail or grabbing a chain on a wind chime because the camera moved and changed my angle, and so I missed it. And I literally jumped to my Misty Doom death. And yeah, that can be frustrating. Especially if you're not used to it from playing the previous games. Because the camera has not changed. That mechanic has not changed from Ico or from Shadow of the Colossus. It works the exact same way as it always has. So the game punishes you for trying to be quick.
Or rather,
there's no critical path.
It punishes you for trusting the game.
No, it
you should.
No, you should trust the game in that when you're in an area and you should be moving slowly through the area to take in all the things that are in the area so that you can find barrels to feed Toriko, because when Toriko gets starving, Toriko just lays down and that's it. You gotta go and find a barrel, at least a barrel, to give Toriko to eat, because Toriko's not moving, not helping you climb, not doing shit till you feed it.
No, but when I say to not trust the game, because, I mean, this is that element that we've seen in, like, Demon's Souls and Dark Souls, where, you know, we have been taught as gamers for a long time about these invisible walls that keep you within this world, and they've now made this world so much bigger, and they've made it far more perilous that, really, you have to completely be aware of what you're doing at all times, because everything has the potential for danger.
Okay, well, so they've taken off the way that you said it made it sound like...
No, that's what I meant. that all of a sudden we don't have these invisible walls anymore that keep us so that we can't fall off of things, because that's a real threat and that's a real danger and that's something that people encounter every day. So we should see that stuff reflected in games, and I think that's why games like Demon's Souls and Dark Souls did that, so that people didn't, you know, weren't going about things recklessly because they realized that there was a safety net built in, because in real life there is no safety net. That's what I meant.
Gotcha. Yep, and that's true. So I can understand why for some people the game could be frustrating if you haven't had the previous experience before. And in all honesty, if you had researched and looked at any of the other games, Ico and Shadow of the Colossus before, you'd know what you were getting into. Okay, the people who are excited about Last Guardian initially, the fandom, are people who played Ico and Shadow of the Colossus and welcome that. Like, it is a frustration that I welcome. It is not a rage quit frustration for me. So I have died twice in the game so far. I am probably, I don't know, maybe halfway into the game. I think I'm around what would be considered the 10th act. And it's just because there are no acts. Like, there's no get to a save point. The game automatically saves pretty much whenever you make a move. And so you just experience the story. There's no beginning, middle, end as far as telling you where this is a level and that's a level and this is a level and that's a level. I did get the game digitally because I knew I had no intention of ever taking the game back. I've been looking forward to this game since it was announced back in 2009, and I don't see that changing anytime too soon as far as not wanting to play the game. Okay, I've been hyped about this game since its announcement. We've been talking about it every year. I know that I was distraught when it looked like the game was canceled and wasn't going to come out, and then extremely elated when it turned it around. I will tell you that right now my experience has been great with the game. Even though I still have some issues with the camera, the camera issues that I'm used to having, you know, from playing Ico and playing Colossus. And so it wasn't anything new to me. And I really enjoy the way that Ueda brings across a different way to think of companion play. Because there aren't any puzzles that you really solve by yourself. There are some areas where you get into where you have to, by yourself, figure out how to get Trico into the room. Or figure out how to get things out to Toriko so that you can engage the actual puzzling part of the level to solve it. It gets very emotional very quick because, at least for me, I got vested in the character very quickly because of the partnership between them and ultimately the kinship that happens between them. I'm at the point where I have learned that there's another, and there's probably more than just one, animal like Toriko. It actually fucked my Christmas, and at the point where I stopped, made me fall off the spire, which I'd almost gotten to the top of, and put me back in a dungeon and fucked up poor Toriko. And so now I'm trying to feed Toriko and help Toriko recover after Toriko helped me get out of a tree that I was stuck in. And almost falling to our complete and utter doom. And I'm super vested in it. And it's because of the way this relationship, you know, has blossomed, you know, from a typical, stereotypical cat like reflexes, like, I'll do what I want to when I want to, you know, really playful moments. There was this one point where we ended up in this open area that had like a
did have the sun and it was warm and approachable.
And it had a small
moment
pool,
of bonding.
It had a small pool of water, but it was large enough for Trico to like lay down and take a bath in. And it did. It like just all of a sudden Toriko just like sat down, then laid down and just started rolling back and forth and then jumped up
and shook. Right.
And then started hopping around, like making splashes in the puddle, just playing. And I'm like, this is the most adorable thing ever. And I find myself.
So, I mean, do we know if Trico is like a baby or if he's like full grown? Do we know any of that? Do we get any of that?
I don't know that. I think that it is somewhat mature, but what I believe thus far that has been released in the game is that some group of people actually worked to train these animals to be warriors. Because when we first find Trico, there are remnants of a mask and a riding harness, like armor,
okay,
on its back and it's broken. And so I think that it like rebelled against that training, and that's why it got stabbed and basically put on timeout. And I freed
bad Trico.
And I freed it from timeout and its harness and its mask, and it's trying to get back to its kind to get them to do the same. Like, I think that's what is going to happen, because the other animal like it that knocked us back into oblivion was wearing a full harness and armor, and its eyes were that pinky red color when it saw Trico, and Trico's eyes didn't trigger. When Trico sees food, its eyes are green. When Trico is enraged and is going to fight, it's that pinky red color. And there are sometimes when, like, Trico's just happy to see me, and they're kind of like this teal color.
Oh,
it's kind of pretty.
That's cute.
So I think that that's what's going to happen. And so it wouldn't surprise me if Trico was a little bit younger than the more established, already trained creatures.
Okay.
But I think that that's kind of where it's heading. At least to me, that's where it seems like it's going. I don't want to give anything away because I haven't finished the game, but I'm going to finish this game. I'm probably going to finish this game before I finish Dishonored 2. And
probably.
And it's just because I'm so enthralled with the game. And it's obvious that the extra time that Ueda and his team took was really to get the aloofness of Trico right, the feathers right, the interaction between the characters, right? The
down. Like, hey, we want to spend several years on an island with just cats.
Like, like there are ways, like when you climb Trico and you're soothing Trico, depending upon where you pet Trico, like different things will happen. Like if you go up and you pet Trico right between its ears, it'll eventually lay down, kind of like a Sphinx lay, like a cat would do, where it tucks its legs underneath it, but it's sitting up like the Sphinx. And then yes. If you keep rubbing it, if you don't stop, it'll then lay down on its side, and it'll basically start to purr.
Oh my, don't say that, because now I need to go and fucking get this game.
And your controller will rumble when it purrs. And okay. The harder it purrs, the harder it rumbles. And you're like, oh, I made Toriko happy. Yes, she's so happy. Like, I baby talk to Toriko when I make it lay down. That's just what
you know. You really shouldn't baby talk to animals, just like you shouldn't baby talk to babies.
I know, but I do. So I think personally that the game is worth every freaking penny that I spent on it. But I am a massive fan of Ico and Shadow of the Colossus, so it makes sense that for me this game is a home run. If you're not a fan of those games, if you're not familiar with those games, before you buy Last Guardian, check those games out. Search them out on YouTube. Watch some people play those games. Don't just do like this is an intro to the game. Actually watch some people play through levels and determine like if that looks fun to you or not. If that looks like an experience you want to have or not. And I especially say Ico more so than Colossus. But if you watch someone playing Ico, and you watch like someone play like the first three levels of Ico, and you're like, meh, then don't pick up Guardian, because it's going to be more meh for you. It's going to be more frustration for you. But if you watch the first three levels of someone playing Ico, and you're like, oh yeah, I definitely want me some of that, go out and buy Guardian right now if you have a PlayStation 4 and play it. Because to me, it smacks me just perfect in the nostalgia bone for Ico.
Perfectly?
Yeah.
Perfectly.
And then, just a really quick last thing. I can't wait to get the Bulletstorm game. The new game.
As soon as you saw that, you're ready. Like, oh, yeah.
I'm so ready. I don't even care that I can play as Duke Nukem. I'm ready. My body's ready. So that's what I got for this week, guys. Last Guardian. It's really good if you like that type of game.
Okay.
All right, well, with that, then I'm going to tell you guys about the business, because we always got to end when we got that business, and that business is to make sure that you visit our website, electricsisterhood.com, add it to your bookmarks. We've got RSS feeds for the site, so if you live La Vida RSS Rita, then make sure that you grab our feeds. We have them linked right on the homepage. So make sure that you snag them, put them in your reader, get our stuff as soon as we put it out on the web. If you enjoyed this episode of our podcast, we've got more than 500 like it. Visit us in iTunes, either on your desktop or through the podcast application on your iOS device. Search for Electric Sisterhood. Subscribe to us, and that will ensure that the moment we put new episodes out on the web, you'll get a hold of them. They will be awesome. You will be awesome. We will be awesome. We can all be awesome together. If you don't live La Vida I, you can also get our podcast through Stitcher Radio. We're in Google Play. We're on VogNetwork.com. Pretty much any podcast aggregator that exists out in the world, we are on it. So make sure that you grab our podcast any which way you like it, but as soon as we put it out so you can consume it. You can also check out all the other great sites and shows that are part of our family, the network that is the Bee's Knees. That starts with us. It ends with B3Crew.com and the No Borders, No Race podcast hosted by our homeboy KBD. SmashRook.com and our homie Hamsterman2049 doing live streams every Wednesday night at 9 Eastern on Twitch, playing old games and new. Definitely want to check them out. If you didn't see his Psychonauts run, you should definitely take a peek at it. It was a fun night. It hit me in the feels. So many feels for Psychonauts. Phil the Issues Guy with Phil's Recap and Review on YouTube and at issuesprogram.com. I gotta tell you, his Westworld recaps are phenomenal. If you enjoyed the show, you will love his recaps, so make sure that you check him out over on YouTube as well as the site issuesprogram.com and subscribe to Phil's Recap and Review. You can call in live, be part of chat, and just be down with an awesome fun time. And last but certainly not least, our homies over at nerdcrave.com, covering all the stuff that nerds crave, from video games to anime, comics, manga, and more. If nerds are talking about it and nerds are loving it, then the nerds at nerdcrave are talking about it and loving it too. So make sure that you add us all to your bookmarks, grab all of our RSS feeds, subscribe to our podcast, follow us on Twitter at ESH News and Instagram at ESH News, and join the conversation on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Land of Esh. Ask us questions. Let us know if there's something you want us to take a look at, review, preview, or whatever. We'll put it on the list, and if we take your advice, we'll give you a shout out on the podcast. That's all the business I got for this week, folks. So as always, I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next time, guys.
Stay classy.
Whee!